You're listening to SBS News.
David Loyne has been a foreign correspondent with the BBC for more than 25 years and was the only foreign reporter with the Taliban when they took Kabul in 1996. He's written extensively on the US-led intervention in Afghanistan. He joins me now from West Wales. David, you witnessed the Taliban firsthand all those years ago. Tell us how it's changed in that time.
I think the key change is how much Kabul has changed. When the Taliban came into Kabul in 1996, and I was with them, they came into a city that had been shattered by civil war. There had been an appalling civil war before they arrived. And in many ways, believe it or not, there was some sense of relief in the city that they'd come because of the disorder before that. But of course, that changed as the government changed. But in the last 20 years, we've built a different Afghanistan. The international contribution has not been for nothing. The lives lost have not been in vain in the sense of building a new country. And I think it's going to be much more difficult for them to govern it. But also, the Taliban have become much harsher in many ways. They're much more savvy in media terms. But what we're hearing in some of the villages and towns of Afghanistan are some pretty brutal things going on.
Well, we heard a very specific warning today about a terror threat at the airport. How big a threat is Islamic State in Afghanistan at the moment, not just to the departing Americans, but also to the Taliban itself?
They've grown over the last 5 years, Islamic State, as an alternative to the Taliban for radicalized young men who wanted to take on the Americans. So there's been a sort of competition for who were the biggest, baddest jihadists, if you like, in Afghanistan, with Islamic State quite often winning because of the brutality that they were meeting out. They are not huge in terms of numbers, but they're huge in terms of impact. Most of the big civilian bombings in Kabul in the last few years have been by Islamic State, and there is that fear now that they'll use this last opportunity to hit international troops who are at the airports, and of course all those thousands of miserable people who are trying to get out and really in fear of their lives. And it's a pretty frightening situation at the airport now.
And I imagine it would be in the interests of Islamic State to build on this chaos, try and jump on the fact that there is so much instability in the country at the moment.
Yes, and I think they have a wider view as well. In the past, they've successfully picked off Taliban who'd fallen out with the administration, Taliban who were seen to have stolen money, those kinds of commanders who've gone over to Islamic State with their men. So there's been this sort of battle between the two sides in recent years. Well, of course, now the Taliban are in control of the country, but there aren't that many Taliban fighters. There's only 70 or 80,000, and it's a very big country. So I think they're in a really difficult position in many ways, the Taliban. They're in disarray. They didn't expect to take Kabul as quickly as they did. They control this huge country, and that gives an opportunity for Islamic State to move into, if you like, the vacuum of order in some places in the country, and some surprising places like the north of the country where they hadn't really existed before.
And David, quite understandably, we've heard a lot about concerns for women and children now that the Taliban has taken over. Do you think the Taliban can set up an inclusive government that includes women?
Well, I have to doubt it. They've come out again with this thing that they did in the mid-90s that when it's safe, women can go back to school. When it's safe, women can work. Well, they've said it's not safe in Kabul, so women civil servants have been asked to return to their homes when they went to offices. I think they have a very limited view of the kinds of roles women can play. In the countryside, they don't want girls educated beyond the age of about 12. And I think there are, very real fears. As well as that, there have been some pretty disturbing reports, actually by a very brave Australian reporter, Lynn O'Donnell, who went around the country in the last few months. And she had credible testimony from people in the centre of the country about the Taliban coming into homes and taking young women as sort of war booty, as sex slaves, effectively, for their young fighters. And they weren't doing that in the late 1990s. So I think it is a pretty low moment for women in Afghanistan.
And talk to me more about the pockets of resistance we're seeing, particularly in the Panjshir Valley. How much of a threat is that to the Taliban at the moment?
It's a remarkable thing that's happening. The former vice president of the country, Amrullah Saleh, a guerrilla fighter himself in the past, and a major CIA asset, actually, in the 1990s. The vice president has now declared himself the president of the country in the absence of the president, and he's flying the national flag in the Panjshir, alongside Panjshiris who have a legendary role in Afghan history, because this province, now the only province holding out against the Taliban, stood out against the Russians, and it stood out against the Taliban in the 1990s. And they're holding out this time. I have to say, they're landlocked. They're going to run out of fuel pretty quickly. They have ammunition, but they're going to run out of fuel and food, given the number of fighters who are apparently pouring in there. So it looks pretty difficult, but they're in a natural fortress, a valley surrounded on three sides by mountains, with the only entrance, this narrow, choking valley, gorge to the south of it, a couple of hours' drive from Kabul. So it's a spirited resistance, but there are negotiations going on to try and bring them down. The Taliban don't want to fight.
And the Taliban has approached it differently this time, haven't they? Because the Panjshir Valley now has a lot of those supply routes cut off.
Yes, they're choked off in terms of land supply. They're managing to get some helicopters in from the neighbouring northern country, Tajikistan, we understand. So there's some resupply coming in from there. And if they can, if they're interested in an offensive, a military offensive, I think it'll be to the north. And they'll try and break out to the north, not fight down to Kabul, and to try and have a land border to Tajikistan. And then you could have a very different situation. And that actually gives the international community, Western countries at least, an opportunity for, you know, a very big challenge as to whether we support them, but also the challenge that we might not recognize the Taliban, because there is still this legitimate government of Afghanistan, which has a lot of support. And as I say, it's a very different country from what it was when the Taliban came last time. And there have been a very brave resistance, opposition rallies in a number of towns in the country over the last week, people flying the Afghan national flag, which the Taliban have now replaced with their own flag. So I think we're going to see a much more difficult country to govern for the Taliban. It doesn't feel a very stable situation.
It's not stable at all, but the Taliban has for many months now been reaching out to the international community. They've had negotiations in China. They've been making deals with Iran. What do you think about how the Taliban's presenting itself on the world stage?
Well, their propaganda is very impressive, very different to what it was before. They're on Twitter and social media in five languages now, Pakistan's Urdu, their own two languages, Arabic and English, and they have different messages in the five languages. They've now held two press conferences since they've took Kabul 10 days ago. They've kept the former mayor of Kabul. They haven't replaced him with a Taliban figure, who is very much a figure who was close to President Ghani, the former president. So all the signs are that they are making signals for an inclusive government. But it's difficult to see how people can work with them, people who in the last 20 years have had such a different sort of worldview and different opportunities, different cultural opportunities in particular. One of the saddest sights this week was seeing musical instruments at the National Music School broken by their own students because they didn't want the Taliban to come in and break them. It's as if their hearts were broken. They broke their own instruments. So I think there's a real cultural shift, and it's going to be difficult for the Taliban to say to some of those political leaders who led in the very different environment before that they should work alongside the Taliban for the long term.
But publicly, though, we are seeing that a more softer, it's a less hard line Taliban that's presenting itself to the world. What do you think happens after that August 31 deadline and the US and allies are no longer on the ground there?
Well, I think it does depend on what happens in the Panjshir and whether they can take the whole country and whether they can negotiate this resistance away. And it does depend on other negotiations that are going on. Former President Karzai in Kabul is leading a group, a conciliation council, which has the sort of fiction of handing over power to the Taliban. Of course, they have no power to hand over. The Taliban call all the shots. So I think it depends a lot on whether they can form something like an inclusive government and whether the order that they're bringing will make a difference to people in Afghanistan, which could crumble the resistance. I was talking to a very old friend in Kabul last night who said it's remarkable because you can now drive around anywhere without people stopping you. The Taliban checkpoints are very light if you're an Afghan and you're not in trouble. And he was saying, oh, I think I might go to Kandahar. You know, I haven't been able to go by road for a long time. And that sense of being able to move around the country, being able to see people, is something that could be different. And that will be the Taliban's calling card. It was before, that they bring order in a way that there wasn't order before.
Quite incredible. Thank you so much, David Lyon, for your thoughts.